Good morning, everyone. Welcome to day two in Portland. We're going to start our day off with a report, a summary report of the outcomes from the recent EM workshop by Melissa and Jeff.
Thank you. So I'm Melissa Hooper. I'm a policy analyst from the Greater Atlantic Regional Fisheries Office.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Jeffrey Smith. I'm the Marine Program Director for the Nature Conservancy here in Maine and also a member of the Groundfish AP and the Council's Electronic Monitoring Working Group.
So we're here on behalf of the Steering Committee for the Northeast Electronic Monitoring Workshop to present the preliminary results from that workshop. Before we get started, on behalf of the Steering Committee, we'd like to thank the Council for your participation on the Steering Committee and helping organize this workshop and put together a great agenda, as well as your assistance and participation at the workshop. We couldn't have done it without you. And we'd also like to thank you for giving us time on the agenda today to present this preliminary report. So, the goals of this workshop were to build off lessons learned from the National EM Workshop to explore how electronic monitoring can be implemented in New England fisheries. We also wanted to build a broader awareness of electronic monitoring technologies among New England stakeholders, including regulators, managers, industry, and the public. We wanted to identify some clear goals for electronic monitoring as a component of modernizing data collection and monitoring in candidate fisheries, specifically talking about the groundfish, scallop, and herring fisheries, and to identify key implementation challenges and developing specific recommendations for how to address those for the Council and NOAA. So the workshop was held on May 7th and 8th last month in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. We had about 90 participants representing diverse stakeholders, including the Council, providers, industry, conservation organizations, the states, and other management partners. And we had speakers from all over the country, and as well as British Columbia and South Africa. We started out with presentations on Northeast pilots and pilot programs elsewhere, looking also at operational programs and what we can learn from those, what happened at the national workshop, as well as the Council's EM work group here, and other discussions happening on electronic monitoring. And then the rest of the workshop focused on breakout discussions to dig into, to have more detailed discussion on specific topics that the participants selected that they wanted to focus on. And these included goals for electronic monitoring, costs and cost drivers, technical and performance standards, and data issues related to data integration and infrastructure. Throughout the discussions, participants focused on three key questions on all of these topics, which were what are the goals for electronic monitoring in the Northeast, what are the key implementation challenges that need to be addressed, and what specific action steps can be taken, who should be responsible, and when is progress realistic. Throughout our discussions, there were several key themes that sort of came up again and again. One of these was that electronic monitoring is only one component of a comprehensive fishery-dependent monitoring system. The different presenters and participants emphasized that it's important not to get distracted by the shiny bauble that is electronic monitoring and not to forget about sort of all the other supporting components of a monitoring program that are necessary to make it all work. Another key theme was compliance monitoring and reducing the cost of at-sea monitoring were consistently raised as primary objectives. Some of the other potential objectives and benefits from electronic monitoring that participants raised included reducing safety risks and addressing logistical challenges associated with carrying at-sea monitors or observers, providing more accurate bycatch and discard reporting, supplying vessel-specific catch and discard data so that discards deducted from allocations are based on the vessel's actual performance rather than an estimated rate, eliminating the observer effect by enabling more comprehensive monitoring coverage, and validating the sustainability of fishing practice and improving the traceability of product. Another key theme was that electronic monitoring implementation must balance many factors, including cost, speed, and data quality. some of our presenters presented this as three sides of a triangle. If you want high speed, you want your data quickly, that might increase costs and reduce data quality. Conversely, if you want high data quality, that might reduce speed or increase costs. And so it's important in designing an electronic monitoring program to remember the balance of those three components. Future electronic monitoring efforts should continue with a collaborative approach to planning and implementation with a broad array of stakeholders. It is essential to prioritize establishing deadlines and timelines to help galvanize efforts. A lot of participants raised this issue and thought it was very important and wanted to emphasize the urgency of needing to establish deadlines and timelines in order to motivate people. Implementation of EM should be scaled to the size and financial capacity of the specific fishery. Participants were very concerned about what the actual costs of any monitoring program, including electronic monitoring programs, would be. And emphasize the difference between cheap and affordable, emphasize that we need to make sure that we are being realistic about what the fishery can afford and what the government can afford in designing any sort of program. We think that we can also learn from others to advance implementation. There's been a lot of pilot studies and some operational programs out there that there's no need to reinvent the wheel, and we should learn from others where we can. And finally, participants would like to see a phased approach utilized towards implementation, where a specific fishery that can offer a working example with a tangible monitoring objective could serve as an example and maybe a bit of motivation to expand electronic monitoring to other fisheries. It doesn't have to be all at once. So throughout the discussions at the workshop, participants brainstormed recommendations to address different issues that were raised. And I'd like to emphasize that these weren't really consensus recommendations, and these are preliminary recommendations from the workshop. Participants put a lot of work into coming up with these ideas, but they don't necessarily represent a consensus of all the folks at the workshop. So some of the recommendations directed towards the council were to develop acceptable standards for an electronic monitoring program to be used in the fixed gear segment of the groundfish fleet as the working example to build from that I mentioned earlier. Participants thought that perhaps the council's electronic monitoring working group could work on this over the course of the summer with the intention of providing something for sectors to use in their operations plans in September. Participants also recommended clarifying the goals and scope of the proposed EM program, as well as the governance structure and roles and responsibilities for the different parties in the system, and thought that that could be done over the course of this summer. They also wanted to consider whether EM could be used to meet some monitoring objectives for the Atlantic herring fishery, and thought this might be a discussion that the Council's new Observer Advisory Committee could have. They recommended establishing clear goals and objective for monitoring in fishery management plans that are achievable and the potential role EM could play in meeting those objectives. This was a general recommendation that should be utilized moving forward with discussion of any sort of electronic monitoring program. And the participants recommended that the council discuss for costs for electronic monitoring specifically and early on during any electronic monitoring discussion process, and thought that this recommendation could be used by the council's electronic monitoring working group in their discussions moving forward. The participants also had specific recommendations for GARFO, including drafting performance standards for implementing electronic monitoring within the larger set of data streams, assessing the quality of existing fishery-dependent data system and current performance standards for fishery-dependent data, which participants acknowledged is already ongoing with the data modernization effort, and asked that GARFO prepare a draft paper of basic cost estimates comparing electronic monitoring and traditional observer programs such as ATSI monitoring or the Northeast Fisheries Observer Program, depending upon if you're looking at the groundfish or herring fisheries. Some other recommendations that weren't specifically directed toward an individual group or entity were to develop a pilot study for the use of electronic monitoring in the Atlantic herring fishery, potentially using herring RSA funds. Participants thought that this might be a good way to test the applicability of this tool for monitoring objectives in that fishery. They also thought that the lessons learned from the electronic monitoring workshop should be brought to and discussed at the fishery-dependent data visioning workshop, which will be at the end of this month in New Bedford, and sort of directed that recommendation to the folks that were at the workshop and on the steering committee who were involved in that effort. And also recommended identifying the roles and responsibility and roles and responsibilities and accountability in the standard setting process. Participants weren't really sure who should be identifying the roles and responsibilities and accountability, but thought perhaps the council in discussions with the regional office and the NRCC would be able to make that determination. And they also recommended compiling and reviewing the technological options that are available for implementing electronic monitoring, including the latest technologies, and thought that perhaps the Sea Grant Network would be able to do this. So what we brought to the council today is a preliminary summary report with really the highlights, the key themes, and the recommendations from the workshop. But we're also working on a final report, which we expect to be available in August. For updates about the workshop, you can go to this website, this web link. We have a workshop website for the workshop, which includes audio recordings of the presentations, as well as the PowerPoint presentations. And then also included here is my and Jeff's contact information if anybody has any questions or would like additional information about what's been happening since the workshop.
Thanks, Melissa. Just a minute or two here. First, I wanted to echo Melissa's appreciation to the council and to NOAA Fisheries for support of the workshop. We took the better part of 6 months trying to put together an agenda that we thought would be useful and productive, and the support from both council and NOAA Fisheries staff was really pivotal for us to be able to put together a workshop. So I want to thank all of you and those of you who attended for the support there. I also had the benefit of attending the national workshop in Seattle earlier this year, and just wanted to highlight a couple of themes that I had heard both at the national workshop and at the regional workshop, because I think they worth repeating and making sure the council is aware of them. The first has to do with the need for setting clear and specific goals and timelines for implementation. At the regional workshop in May, there was a lot of discussions about the technology, what the technology can and cannot do. And I think it's very important not to try and make EM do everything for us and to fix all of the shortcomings that we may have in the monitoring system. There are things it can and cannot do, and I think that it's really important for the council and NOAA Fisheries to really articulate the goals of what it is that you want this technology to do, recognizing that it can't do everything, and setting some timelines for doing that. That was, again, something I heard in Seattle and something we heard in Portsmouth a month or so ago. The second one is that I think there's a need to develop some performance standards for the technology. There's a lot of service providers out there right now that I think are ready to go. They need to know what these performance standards are, and I think that they can design to them. So I hope that the council and NOAA Fisheries will think about those performance standards, get them out, and let the technology providers come back to us with their proposals on how to meet the standards that you all develop. I think a third one that was a recommendation from the workshop was also having the council and the agency develop some evaluation criteria for using this technology. The example that I'm thinking of mostly is for groundfish sector monitoring plans. I sit on the board of the Maine Coast Community Sector. There's a strong interest in that sector for moving forward with electronic monitoring. Right now we have 7 boats out on the water and a pilot program testing the technology out. And I think that there is strong interest in including this in our monitoring plan. But we don't really know what the criteria that the council and or the agency will use to determine whether, yes, you can use it or yes, you can't. And I think articulating those criteria, again, so that the sectors can design against them in their monitoring plans is something that's very important step that needs to take. And lastly, I'll just close by saying I think we all know that we've had pilot projects on the water for electronic monitoring in New England for close to a decade now. And I think one of the themes that I really heard loud and clear at both the national workshop, but more particularly the regional one, is that it's time to move from pilot projects to implementation. I think the council and NIMFS have the tools they need to do that. And I think it's very clear that the day is coming sooner rather than later when industry is going to have to start picking up the cost for at-sea monitoring, and that if this technology can help reduce those costs or help it work better for some in the fleet, not all, that having another tool available for when industry is forced to pick up those costs is really, really important. And so I hope that the council and NOAA can work towards making that happen so that we can get the monitoring data we need at sea and in an affordable manner. So thanks again for your time, and I think we're happy to take questions if you want.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa and Jeff, for the organization and for the report. From all the work you've been doing, it surely sounds like we're getting close to the rubber hitting the road. Questions for Jeff and Melissa from the council? Mike?
A couple of the suggestions would lead one to believe that we're really ready to move forward with electronic monitoring in the herring fishery. That was highlighted along with the fixed ground fish, but the herring fishery. So does that imply that basically people who know the technology, know it well and have the expertise, which I'm not one of those, but from the technology side, there's the sense that we can actually monitor electronically and get the information we need in terms of how many little haddocks show up in the fishery, how many river herring show up in the fishery, which I find it hard to believe you're going to be able to deal with that one, and what doesn't come on deck, the wastage issues. Is the technology there to address those problems?
So I think from the discussions at the workshop and that we've been having at like the electronic monitoring working group and elsewhere, I think we don't know all the answers to those questions yet, but I think an important point from the workshop was that you can't answer them until you sort of get into the development and start working through those issues and trying to figure out if you can design a program that would address all those issues. Electronic monitoring is just a tool and can be used in different ways. And so, I think the way it was discussed using it in the herring fishery would be either just to monitor the presence and absence of slippage events or to monitor compliance with a maximized or full retention program where some of that sampling could happen at the dock. So that's where participants, emphasized that it needs to be a comprehensive monitoring program that's designed that may use EM as a component, and that to start out with phased implementation, get started, work through all those issues, try to improve on it over time, make it flexible and adaptable so that if you don't get it right the first time, you can maybe get it right the second time, and to at least get the process started.
Yeah, I'll just add quickly, I think Melissa hit it well, that with respect to the herring fishery, the discussion that happened at the workshop was around monitoring for slippage events. It wasn't to measure and count every fish that hit the deck of the boat. It was to see that the fish that came up in the net was actually making it to the deck of the boat and making sure that those slippage requirements are complied with. I think in the groundfish fishery, there's been discussions of a couple approaches. One is basically using the technology as an audit tool to check the accuracy of vessel trip reports. So if a captain is reporting his discards through his VTR, you could use the cameras to validate the VTR. Or the other option that has been discussed that I'm not sure we're there yet is moving to more of a full retention fishery, landing everything and counting it at the dock and just using the camera to confirm that everything was retained. So I think Melissa hit it well that it depends on what you're asking the technology to do in order to answer the question of whether the technology can do it or not.
Terry. Tom.
Jeff, I think one of the conclusions of this workshop was that it's time to move away from pilot projects towards implementation. I guess the one thing I question and ask is whether the pilot projects have actually considered or explored how these data streams will actually be used. How will they be used in assessments? How will they be used in quota monitoring? How will they be used if you have part of the fishery that's under EM and another part of the fishery that's not under EM?
Mm-hmm.
Had that type of thing been explored in pilot projects?
Well, I was hoping that we might have the report from the pilot project that the Observer program has been running for the last couple of years, because I think that they do get into some of that, but I haven't seen the report. I know it's expected sometime soon. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question. I mean, I know there's been discussion in the pilots of speciation of fish, estimating weights, estimating sizes, and I think that those data streams can feed into stock assessments. They can feed into catch accounting and things like that. But I don't know that it's been a specific goal of the pilot projects to answer those questions. But I certainly think that my understanding of the data that is collected through EM, that they could be worked into some of the catch accounting and some of the stock assessments, but can't speak to whether that was a specific goal of all of the pilot programs. I don't know if you have anything to add, Melissa.
No,
Tom.
Just on that point specifically, I think, at least in the short term, what many who are pushing forward with electronic monitoring are trying to do is not to create new data streams, but to replace, the sources of information that are going into data streams. So in certain models with EM, say in ground fish sectors, we already have VTRs, we already have dealer reports, but, an auditing model using electronic monitoring would effectively transition the VTRs, change the nature of that information and increase the priority and weight we're giving to the VTRs as credible sources of both landings and discards. Right now, they're not being used as discards. So I think wherever possible, we're not trying to build new pipes into that system, but, try to improve the data through EM, improve the data that are in those forms already.
Other comments from the council? Seeing none, Ron?
Take down. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I attended the workshop, and it was pretty good. But there was one question that was just gnawing away at me, and that is, where is there an example of the federal government putting surveillance cameras on private property? And, so far it's been a coalition of the willing, but I can't see a system that's going to force surveillance cameras on private property for the purposes of ensuring compliance with the regulation. I mean, I was just... My seafood dealership, we're inspected. We have surprise inspections. But is the government going to make it a requirement for me to get my permit to have a surveillance camera in my processing facility so that pay an outside contractor to come in and take random samples from that video to ensure that I'm in compliance? I think we're heading down a path that I'm not sure is legal. And I'm just wondering whether the attorneys could weigh in on this.
I mean, right now, you're required to have a person on board to observe. This is a variation of that. And, in fact, some people would say it's less intrusive. So to the extent that that's already occurring, as a privilege for getting a permit, you agree to do this. You're not being forced to do it. You're doing it as part of a highly regulated industry permit in order to participate in a in harvest from a natural resource that's governed by the federal government.
If I could, I don't know the answer to your question, Ron, if there is an example of it or not. I bet there probably is, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. But what I did want to say is I think that in all the discussions that I've heard around electronic monitoring, it hasn't been about forcing every single permit owner to use it and making it a condition of getting your permit. I think what people want to do is to have it as an alternative to taking the human observer, as was just pointed out. Not a requirement for everyone, but a tool that someone could use. I think for some of the smaller vessels that are operating in the fleet, accommodating an observer on board the boat is challenging logistically, providing food, bunk, space, keeping them safe. Those are all concerns that captains have, and if putting a camera on board your boat to collect the information we're trying to collect is a viable alternative to taking a person, I think people should have the option to select it. I'm not saying everybody should be forced to take it, but I think everyone should have a choice to take one if they want.
Okay, so the data collection aspect is one aspect, but the term I keep on hearing is compliance. And our current observers, are they tasked with ensuring compliance? And are they tasked with providing, I mean, I know enforcement looks at their data, but has that program, the data collection program, you know, the Sea Observer program, morphed into compliance inspectors? Is that what we have on board the vessels now?
So I think, well, I can clarify that when electronic monitoring is being discussed in terms of being used for compliance, that's not necessarily for enforcement. So it's not being discussed in terms of using it to monitor whether someone's complying with the trip limits from the video camera or, you know, what is or isn't being discarded. When we talk about using it for compliance, it's for verification of what's reported, and then what's reported becomes the data collected.
Okay, I'm just, you know, everybody's ready for this stuff, but I was thinking how I would use a camera and onboard a vessel if I wanted to ensure compliance. And it's a slide down a slippery slope. Like, for example, right now the captains have control of the switch for the camera. But what if the next step is, well, that's not good because it might affect using the information for compliance, so maybe the camera should not be in the control of the captain, that it's on 24/7. And you could see there's a lot of issues here because 24/7 has an advantage. If it could see both rails, you could tell if the vessel's illegally offloading, for example. So I'm just saying that there's a lot of questions about using this. I could see it in a small, limited way to replace a sea sampler to collect some scientific data. I think there's a long way to go. They have active testing underway. That's great, but it keeps sliding. And just a word of caution.
Jeff.
Morning, everybody. I'm Jeff Kalin from Lens Fisheries in Cape May, New Jersey. And I had a question about the second bullet on recommendations for next steps concerning use of herring RSA funds for electronic monitoring in the herring fishery. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to the conference. We had our SSC meeting on the squid mackerel butterfish specifications in Baltimore at the same time. But I just wondered if the group was aware of the fact that the industry and SMAST are supporting the use of RSA funds to do the shoreside monitoring program. And I think that would be the priority today for the use of those monies. Unfortunately, though, because such a small percentage of the Area 2 fishery has been caught to date, only 36%, and Area 3 fish are not part of the river herring shoreside monitoring program. It could give us potential to do a haddock project out there. But at any rate, I think from the perspective of the fishery, those funds have already been allocated and will be, hopefully in the future, to the shoreside monitoring program. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I wasn't there to be able to say that, but I don't think that's going to be a good source. Like Ron said, I guess it's a brave new world. We run two midwater trawlers, and I think we're looking at this as from a business perspective in terms of what the right cost or the mix of costs will be to be able to continue to operate in the fisheries. So, I mean, I think Mary Beth is doing some work in a pilot study. I would not say that the pilot studies have been done. It's time for implementation. We haven't even started the pilot study yet. And I had questions about who's going to monitor the cameras, you know, who's going to audit the data, how quickly can it be downloaded. You do it on a trip-by-trip basis. You're going to get a picture of the guy on deck taking a leak. You know, I mean, who's going to go through all this stuff? A lot of questions. We're going to be participants because it's pretty clear that the 100% observer rate isn't going to be met. There's not enough resources to do that, so it could be a good option. But funding, I think, RSA is probably not a very good option, so I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
I see a hand in the back, but I can't see a face. Bonnie.
Hi, good morning. Bonnie Brady, Long Island Commercial Fishing Association. I apologize I came late, so I did not catch the program. But the biggest question that we have heard regarding using cameras on trawlers, where you obviously catch many different levels of fish and kinds of fish, is that it's not the issue of having the camera. It's the cost that's inherent when there's a question about a certain fish. And as a result, they have to stop the film, and then they have to get the other person that's a higher level to come and review the film at a higher hourly cost. So we've been quoted costs of up to $50,000 per boat plus, because if there's a problem with the film, they have to call in the person who individually goes through each one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. That is something that obviously New York could not handle. We do not have large boats, mostly mom-and-pop shops. To put $50,000 on top of the cost that we already have is just inane. Perhaps for certain fixed gear where you catch one fish only, one at a time, that might be an option for some, but please don't just broad stroke. Thank you.
Rich.
Excuse me. Thank you. Rich Rue, American Bluefin Tuna Association. Sorry about the cell phone interference. I guess the first thing I wanted to say was thanks to Jeffrey for letting some of us from highly migratory species come to an electronic monitoring workshop that wasn't really intended to address our need, and we found out about it late, and I think we might be, the bluefin fishery and the pelagic longline fishery might be one of the first fisheries that are really up for and dependent upon 100% electronic, hopefully video camera in combination with daily reporting capabilities from a new level of VMS type systems. And the entire program is dependent upon that. That 100% monitoring capability has to replace 8% observer coverage right now, and it's intended to be able to accurately account for individual bluefin quotas that have monitoring value to them, sale value to them, if you will, and value to the fishery as a whole, and they're going to be very limited, and in some cases they may be very expensive. And I guess the bottom line for us was we were hoping that the joint Oceana NOAA efforts in this direction were further along than anything else we saw anywhere. And I'd, if anyone has information of groups that are looking at this that speed this that are further along in the process of building a tamper-proof electronic monitoring system that can be, you know, subsampled when you get back to port by people assigned to do that. In some cases, it's not a 24-hour video that you have to look back. It's a look back at 4 hours of haul back, for example, or some other minor components as well. But it's got to be tamper proof. In terms of answering Ron Smolitz's first question about is this even legal? I thought that issue was settled, and I thought Gene had basically said it when there was talk early on in the 80s about certain conditions that were being applied to the permit, that was tested quite a bit, and it was, and I thought it was broadly interpreted that if the federal government was going to issue a permit, it had the right to put conditions on that permit that if you didn't like, you didn't have to get the permit. So we're hoping that progress is made on the electronic monitoring front a lot faster, because we're supposed to be seeing implementation of a program that just simply can't work and could turn into a disaster if there is not electronic monitoring, because we've already been promised that there's no hope of going anything beyond 8% observer coverage, and anything less than 100%, it just isn't going to work. So thanks very much.
Is there anybody else in the audience? Seeing none, are there any further comments? Mike? Vincent?
Yeah, I think the issue of whether this is about collecting scientific data or is it about compliance is an old story. It's clearly going to be about both. I mean, some of the people that would advocate the system are advocating it to enforce a full retention system. It's clearly about compliance. And that's probably one of the places where the technology is most ready to actually be applied, if you actually had a no-retention system. So that to me is a debate that's occurred a long time ago. I would be a strong advocate of advancing towards more application of electronic monitoring. I think many of the issues we deal with would benefit from more investment in technology. My concern is that this isn't going to happen with 20 recommendations or 30 or whatever that various groups ought to say good things about it. It really is going to require leadership where there is some clear message about from a objective source, not somebody trying to sell technology, but an objective source about what the technology can do today and what it can't do, what it costs, what advances could be made with reasonable investments in further development of the technology, which I strongly believe should be made, what role it could play in compliance and making cases against people for violations and so forth, what represents appropriate evidence in a legal setting, all of those sort of things that are very substantive issues, the issues of standardization and performance, all the sort of things that resulted in it taking many years to actually get the VMS system up and fully running, would apply here. And I don't think that just sort of a bulleted list of questions for the council or suggestions for we recommend this or agree to that is actually going to achieve it. There needs to be leadership to put together a blueprint that addresses these issues from the technology side all the way through to how the data will be used and what are the legal basis for using it. We can't do that.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Jeff, Melissa. Thank you for your presentation. And on your recommendations and some of your deliberations about the technology, did you discuss whether it should be mandatory or voluntary, very similar to our electronic vessel trip reporting, you know, how some people go electronically and others do paper? Have you had any discussions about this?
I mean, it was discussed that it could be done either way. There wasn't any recommendation for one or the other. It depends upon the authorizations to use it under the management plans, which right now is only voluntary for the groundfish fishery.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the discussion at the workshop had mostly to do with, you know, with Gene's point that it's mandatory to take an observer right now if one is assigned. And I think the idea is it possible to use the camera system, the video monitoring technology, as an alternative to the observer? I don't think any of the discussions that I heard were people saying it's mandatory on every single boat. It was really an alternative for people to consider. If someone wants to pay to take an observer on their boat and has the capacity on the vessel to do it, I don't think they'd be forced to take a camera. But if there are those in the fishery that think that their operation is better suited to the technology, they were just hoping that it was available to them as an option. So, it's mandatory to have at-sea monitoring and observer coverage on your boat, and perhaps voluntary to decide which way you prefer. prefer to do it if the technology is approved for use.
Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to correct one thing that Rich said when he described, he asked if the government has the right to do this. There's a very clear principle here that makes me very nervous about this whole issue, and I agree with what Ron said in principle. But I am also cognizant of what Gene and Mitch are saying here. And I think we have to distinguish between rights and powers. Rights are only held by individuals, and they can't be changed. They are immutable and permanent. States and governments only have powers. They don't have rights. So if we allow the government to do this, then what we're doing is we're allowing the government the power to do it. We're not allowing them the right to do it, because then we're saying that it's something that they can do at any time and any place and forever. So, and this is a common error, and it bothers me because it's an important error, and it's important in understanding what we're actually doing with this kind of innovation. Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the council? Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to follow up on the issue of pilots, because I know there has been some pilot work done, but just reflecting on what was done in Amendment 4 and Amendment 15, in terms of how we framed our monitoring strategies, those were basically built around the concept of 100% observer coverage. And, it appears that's not going to happen for the mackerel and herring fisheries. And so we at our last meeting just aligned our slippage recommendation coming out of our framework with the same move-along provisions that the New England Council adopted for the herring fishery. So now that fleet has similar slippage requirements, as Jeff pointed out earlier, that might be an area for some specific thinking about additional pilot work, because it seems that specific piloting hasn't been done in the context of how might we set up a compliance monitoring strategy for the issue of slippage. I appreciate the fact that there's been some piloting work done and some of that may be ready for implementation. I don't know that any specific pilot work has been done along those lines. So that might be the sort of thing that we could collectively think about as a discrete project to advance collectively between the councils. It also seems that when we first started thinking about electronic monitoring, we want to try to find a cheaper substitute for a personal or physical observer being on the boat. And that's clearly not what EM does. But I think it can, as part of a broader strategy, if it's well framed, it can do a lot. I mean, I think it can help us answer a lot of questions, and particularly given the limitations we have on observer resources, it is important to rethink some of those strategies. So thank you.
Jeff.
So a couple things on the issue of pilots. If I wasn't clear in my comments, I apologize. But what the point I was trying to make is that there have been a lot of pilot projects in the groundfish fishery. They started, Tom could probably tell you, I think it's close to 10 years ago. I recognize, and it came out at the workshop, that there have not been pilots in the herring fishery, and that's why people said let's look at some pilots in the herring fishery. So I just want to be clear, when I was talking about pilots happening for a long time, it was in the groundfish fishery. And while I have the mic, I wanted to go back to Mike's comments and appreciate what he said regarding the need for leadership here. I looked through the recommendations that came out of the workshop, and I think that they're quite consistent with the sentiments that Mike offered, that that this needs to there needs to be leadership to make this happen. And it was suggested that maybe the council isn't the place for that leadership. I think that this council can send a strong message to the leadership at NOAA that if this is a technology that the council is interested in bringing into its monitoring programs, that they could articulate that to the agency and then work together with them on the leadership needed to implement it. I know George is behind me somewhere. I know that this is an issue of getting national attention right now, and so I do believe that there's opportunities to move this forward, and just agree with Mike 100% that it's going to take real leadership to make it happen, and we hope it's here in the room and here in the region. Thanks.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree entirely with Jeff, and my question is more for Director Bullard. Can you comment on your position on electronic monitoring, where you would like to go, given the need for leadership that's been called for by numerous people? Perhaps give us a hint on where you'd like next
can,
steps.
Can you hold that thought for just a minute?
Is he my straight man or what?
Yeah, I think. Are there any further comments, questions for Carl? You have something to say? And you're going to wrap it up.
Carl Bouchard, I just have a quick question. This electronic monitoring, would that apply to for-hire vessels? Everything's talked about commercial vessels. How about the for-hire vessels, whether it be 6-pack or 80-pack? Would they be included under this?
Melissa or Jeff?
Electronic, I don't know of any pilots that have been done on how electronic monitoring cameras can be used on for hire vessels. That doesn't mean that it couldn't be used there. At the workshop, we were primarily discussing commercial fisheries, I think. And because the couple of fisheries that have expressed the most interest are groundfish and herring commercial fisheries, so that's where most discussions have been taking place.
If I could, I think that is an issue for the council and NOAA to consider. I don't know that for hire vessels are currently required to carry observers. I don't believe they are, but I don't know for sure, so I'm not going to say they're not. But if for-hire vessels were required to carry observers or to have increased accountability on board those boats, I would think that video technology would certainly be a candidate for it, because the fish are coming on one hook at a time. So I think that with a camera array, you could see what's happening on the boat fairly well, because again, they're coming up one hook at a time. So I think the technology could work for it. I don't know that those monitoring requirements are in place for the for-hire vessels now, but that could certainly be considered if that's the direction that the agency and the council wanted to go.
It just seems to me that these are also federally permitted commercial vessels. I mean, if they're for hire, they're certainly commercial, and they should be included under the same monitoring as the guy that does hauling gill nets or hooks or a trawl. Thank you.
And thank you, Melissa and Jeff and the rest of your team for this report. Appreciate and looking forward to the final report. Before we move on to the summary of activities of the council's Tom's report, I'm going to turn over to John to answer Matt's question, and he's going to tap on Dan Morris.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Let me make one comment before introducing Dan Morris, my deputy. And the comment is on Jeff and Melissa's presentation. Thank you, first of all, Melissa and Jeff, for that. Several people made some interesting comments. Chairman Robbins talked about how both councils have suggested 100% coverage on various fisheries, and Mike talked about how we should be frank and recognize that observers have been used for both science and enforcement. And for those who weren't in the audience, yesterday we got, in Logan's presentation, an understanding about why enforcement is necessary. It would be very nice to be naive and be seduced by happy talk. But that's not why council members are here, to be seduced by happy talk. We all live in the real world. And so When councils recommend 100% coverage, it's not coverage with exception. You're recommending 100% coverage. It's not coverage when the captain has the on button on, and not coverage when the captain turns the on button off. You're suggesting there should be coverage 100% of the time. I think that means without exception. So if that's your goal, 100% coverage, I think what you're striving for is coverage without exception. So if we're going to go down this road and your goal is coverage without exception, then I think what electronic monitoring and this new technology is trying to accomplish is with technology, coverage without exception. Not when an observer might be sleeping, not when a captain turns something off, but coverage without exception. If that's a goal of a council, maybe technology allows that to happen. And I think in an attempt to get favor in an industry, we shouldn't try and say that something is what it isn't. We should be honest. This is what it is. If you like it, good. If you don't like it, you don't like it. But don't try and pretend it's something that it isn't. But I think the council has, in certain instances, say, when it says we want 100% coverage, what you're saying is we want something there 100% of the time. And we have, and Dr. Karp and I have said, when you ask for things like that, you're bumping up against limited resources. And we've had our disagreements on that. And as I've said, Dr. Karp can't be here, but on this topic, Wendy Gabriel is here. So, end of comment. Now, introduction. In the presentation, Melissa said, electronic monitoring is one component of a comprehensive fishery-dependent monitoring system, one component of a fishery-dependent monitoring system. And Matt says, so what is your reaction on this? And several people have called for leadership on this. And this is a topic that is very important to us. And we know that we need to provide leadership on this. It is important on a national level. That is one reason that Sam Rauch, my boss, I told you I might not be here after comments I made yesterday. Thank God I still am. I still am here. I'm very grateful. Thank you, Sam. Still have a job today. But one of the reasons Sam is here is because this topic is important on a national level. And George LaPointe, back home in Maine, seeking any excuse to come home to Maine, is also here and honchoing this project on a national level. This topic is very important on a national level. So both Sam and George are here wanting to know what we are doing on this topic. It is important to this council and the MID, and we're going to hear from Tom Dempsey on that a little later. It is important to the region, and Bill Karp and I have had many discussions about the urgency that this deserves. But the person who is really driving this for GARFO is Dan Morris, and I asked him to come up especially for this to explain how Melissa's presentation fits in to the greater whole, how the one component of electronic monitoring fits into the greater whole of fishery-dependent data collection, so that you can see the blueprint for the larger whole. And so without further ado, I'd turn to Dan Morris to give you the larger context. Dan.
Good morning. I'm Dan Morris. I'm the Deputy Regional Administrator for NOAA Fisheries. And after that introduction, and noting that my boss and his boss are here, I will not attempt to seduce you with happy talk. Just isn't happening today. That was my plan, so let's just get rid of this. Anyhow, first I'd like to thank Melissa and Jeff for their reports. A special broader thanks to the Nature Conservancy. It was months and months ago when Russ Brown of the Science Center and I met with Nature Conservancy leadership to talk about electronic monitoring, and they stepped up and said, let's see what happens at this national workshop and bring it home and talk about regional implementation. And so we really just want to thank everyone involved with that workshop, but particularly the Nature Conservancy, but also George LaPointe, Dorothy Lohman from the West Coast, and many of the folks from GMRI who served as facilitators and just kind of moving the meeting along, and everyone who made up the steering committee. We were very pleased with the outcome, and we were eager. The Council Work Group on EM has also been a forum for EM conversations, and we appreciate the time that they've put into this. And I think we're all advancing this conversation. You all have a great number of important questions, and the folks here who spoke earlier have important questions that are on target. Where does the leadership come from? Where does the money come from? What about privacy? What are the details of when this thing is on and off on the boat? What is the data flow or data flows? What does it actually do? Is it replacing an observer? Is it compliance? Is it scientific data? Is it enforcement evidence? Those are all great questions. And EM is an important tool that we want to better understand and gain maximum utility out of it, but we have to answer those questions. So the forum or the workshop was just really wonderful for getting it all out there and hearing. You know, we've been focused on groundfish, but hearing the herring representatives there. There are a few folks like Ron Smallwitz interested about its application or its non-application in the scallop fleet, and then Rick Bruet to talk to us about tuna. It's an excellent forum, and we learned a lot, and we heard you. And so we have taken the recommendations from the workshop and from our other conversations with you all to heart, and we're ready for action. So, first of all, I understand many industry members facing the possibility of having to pay for at-sea monitors attach great urgency to EM. And assuming it can be a more cost-effective option for collecting the data we need, as one of the commenters earlier said, this assumption hasn't been thoroughly borne out and tested in all of our components of the fishery. It might work for some. It might work might not work for others. At the EM workshop, we committed to doing as close an analysis of the cost as we possibly can. We've prepared an outline for how we plan to approach this analysis. And has it gone out? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's been distributed. There are copies out here on the table, and we welcome your input on it. It is not everybody's EM model. For the purposes of a cost analysis, we just had to conclude things, and we will conclude or assume things, rather, that there will be a certain sampling rate. There will be a certain type of analysis in certain models, and this is our starting point for determining costs that the boat may have to bear. If it's a sector, the sector may have to bear, and that the government may have to bear. And it's at that point when we've done this analysis, and I hope we can deliver it, we're aiming to deliver it by the 1st of October with support from GMRI, it's at that point that we can look at it and put our eyes a little wider and pick apart the assumptions and determine how that would steer our cost up or down from the ones we used in this analysis, and then make informed decisions about whether to proceed and at what scale and in what parts of the fishery. So we think that's an important commitment, and we're on that. Also, Melissa and others in the regional office and the Science Center have, and with our research partners, have started working with Tom Dempsey on a proposal for the fixed gear sector to utilize EM as an alternative to at-sea monitors for the 2015 fishing year. Remember, Amendment 16 already has the language in there to authorize the use of EM. And they're working on a detailed proposal to include in their operations plan this fall. And we will be meeting with them over the next few months to assist them with developing an acceptable proposal. Someone asked, you know, what is the agency going to call for? And if we're doing that in a vacuum, it's doomed. And so this kind of partnership is what we need to have a concrete example that we can work from and take lessons learned and go through the what-ifs, perhaps in a narrow way. The fixed gear sector is, you know, one sector, one and a couple of gear types that we're going to be working with. But it's a starting point, and it's going to get us critiquing our own systems and how that data flows and how usable and for what purposes those data are usable. So we're looking forward to for doing that. And, you know, as your questions have indicated, installing the equipment on the boats is a relatively easy part. It's mechanical. Someone comes in, tests the equipment, sees the video flow, and walks off and says, yeah, that's it. But it's everything downstream of that that we've got to work out. So we look forward to working with Tom in the fixed gear sector on that. Why the fixed gear sector? You know, Jeff mentioned the Maine Coast community sector is very interested and well. We're not going to be exclusionary here. We're open to broader participation next May, and we welcome the broader conversation. The fixed gear sector is especially poised for this, and they have extensive experience using this technology through the pilot studies, and we're working towards very broad, towards 100% participation for this sector to considerably simplify implementation. So not just one or two folks here, but hopefully the whole group can get on board with it. We're going to use logbook validation method. EM video data will be sampled to validate or invalidate the VTR submitted by the fishermen. So, as Tom mentioned, the VTR would then become the document of record for the trip in terms of the discards, rather than using an estimated discard based on observed trips. That is, if the video confirms that the VTR is valid. It's going to be a turnkey operation. Tom and the fixed gear sector intend to work with a third-party vendor, which will handle the analysis, much of the analysis, and the data submission. And we'll be part of that conversation, again, on what are the approvable details that can be worked into a sector operations plan. So we'd like to express our sincere appreciation to the fixed gear sector for stepping up like this, and we welcome others to do that. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about this in the coming months. Finally, under this topic of EM narrowly, we heard from a few folks at the herring fleet who said EM could be used to monitor slippage or events or maximize retention. We agree that this has merit, and we'd like to hear some more discussion in the council about how this would work and whether and to what extent the current slippage measures could be adjusted if the video data on the events were available. So knowing that that's a tool now may adjust the conversation that helped to form amendments 5 and 14, 4 and 14. And so thank you to Rick Robbins for that suggestion. And, you know, we would entertain the idea of, you know, EFPs or just entertaining what the model will be and ways of testing it in the fleet and what exactly are the expectations in the herring fishery, because I think, as Dr. Sissonwine mentioned, they're probably going to be different from what they are in groundfish. So we look forward to working with you all on that as well. Now, what we've been talking about here is moving EM into our current state of fishery-dependent data collections, and that's fine. That's something that we can work with, and we're talking about using EM to validate a VTR. So it's an important tool that validates a VTR and makes that our document of record for discards. What I'd like to talk about for a moment is also looking forward beyond our current state of collections. Our current suite of fishery-dependent data collections, VTRs, electronic dealer reports, biosampling, observer coverage, and then this kind of the second wave, which included VMS and then eventually sector monitoring, these all developed over a 20-year period as needed. And there's some doodads hung on there, some special VMS reports that monitor catch on, you know, on a daily basis, and some extra things. But it's all been in response to discrete council measures or management needs that have come up over the years. We, as many of you know, we're trying to take a step back and pause from hanging on those additional things and go back to what are the data and what are the data qualities that we really need to manage the fishery. Not what are we collecting and how do we manage from that, but as managers, as scientists, and you know, and for the benefit of our research partners and for the industry, what do we all need to manage our this business of fishing, this fishing and the governance that goes along with it? And so over the last several months, we've had a couple of staff going around interviewing folks, about 150 folks so far. They've interviewed folks in the regional office, the Science Center, the Southeast Region and Science Center, ACCSP, both councils. And we've also, through working with GMRI under a grant, initiated some interviews with sector managers and fishermen, trying to get at what are your basic data needs? What are your needs as fishermen, as scientists, as managers? When do you need that data, and what are the data qualities that you would associate with that? So what they're doing is developing a needs or a requirements catalog. We want to start with requirements and not with what we have. So if you contemplate for a few moments a blank slate, if we were starting today designing a fishery-dependent data collection system, it might not look anything like what we have today. But we've kind of grown on to those initial VTRs and dealer reports, and we have what we have today. And so what we're trying to do is go to everyone about what their needs are, and then we're going to start figuring out how to draw from a fishing trip what the events in a fishing trip and where you can collect the data to satisfy those needs. So if you'll think of a fishing trip that begins from the idea of going fishing all the way to retail sale, you know, just for the moment, think of it as kind of a linear process. And then you've got our catalog of requirements there. How do you map events in your trip down to satisfy the various requirements? That's really the subject of a workshop that's going to occur at the end of this month down in down at UMass Dartmouth. It's, or I think it's actually New Bedford. It's has to do with our data. You hear it called Process B. You hear it called a visioning process. I call it our modernization initiative. Because what we have in mind is to totally modernize our fishery-dependent data collections, beginning from a requirements basis. All right. So requirements, we determine them. We talk to broadly. We troubleshoot those. Eventually, there's going to be some gear technologists brought in who will teach us or will help develop the tools that will take the events in the fishing trip and the collections in the fishing trip and create data streams to satisfy those requirements. That's the plan. So, and that's what this workshop at the end of the month in New Bedford is beginning to move along. So that's our modernization project. We started on this about a year ago. About 7-8 months ago, we got an assignment from headquarters, from Sam Rauch and from Richard Merrick, the chief scientist for NOAA Fisheries, indicating that every regional office in every region science center pair needed to develop an electronic technologies implementation plan. So what this does, this is our plan, and this is what George LaPointe has been driving here a great deal over the last several months. Electronic technologies implementation plan is what we develop, and we gain agreement from the science, or I'm sorry, from the councils, to embark upon to improve our fishery-dependent collections. So the key point here is that the modernization initiative comes from the regional office, and we have to engage the councils to do that. The implementation plan is a broader thing. It is how we are going to map from our current state to our modernization initiative, and it necessarily requires a partnership between the regional office and the science center and the councils, because if we're just saying, you know, go electronic, you got to do it, it's the smart thing to do, it's not going to go. It's not going to work. We need your ideas. We need your involvement in many steps of this. So we're drafting an electronic technologies implementation plan that includes near-term goals, such as electronic monitoring. First phase of that would be working with the fixed gear sector. But things that are far more grand and comprehensive, and that would be full implementation of our fishery-dependent data collections modernization initiative with the cooperation of the fishery management councils and our partners such as ASNFC and ACCSP. And to give us, there were several people here who spoke about how do we keep our feet to the fire. Well, let's put a deadline out there. Our working deadline that we'd like to discuss with you and begin working with you is May 2017. We would like you to join us in committing to working towards full implementation of data modernization in the New England and Mid-Atlantic fleets by May of 2017. So that I present that target as a point of discussion and as in a rather qualified way. It's not something that we can or should do alone. It's going to require buy-in and long-term commitment from the council and industry at large. And we're calling in help, in fact. And right now I'm working on a contract to bring in project management help and some additional electronic technologies and IT capacity so that we can embark on our piece of this and trying to get our house in order so that as we work with you over the next 3 years to develop exactly what these implementation strategies are and exactly what our fishery-dependent data collections will look like in the future, that we'll have the capacity to support that vision. So I'll pause there and gladly take any questions you have.
Good to see you again, Dan. I'm going to start with the first question. Is could you provide a little bit more context of what you mean of full implementation by 2017? What specifically are you thinking of?
Okay, we have 3 years to pull together a fishery-dependent data collection system that involves electronic collections of position, of input of gear type, and of catch, and of discards, and of all the sorts of things that that our scientists and our managers need to do their jobs. I don't think that any of us sees something like a vessel trip report ever going away. But what we currently have may not look any. Or, I'm sorry. What we have in the future may not look like anything like our current vessel trip report. We could get all of our positioning information as a direct feed from a GPS. We could get our gear entirely from a VMS declaration or some other type of declaration, and perhaps the VTR is a much more concise document, or perhaps it's auto-filled through certain information that comes through EM. You know, dare to dream a little bit. So I don't want to say that it's going to be this widget and that form and this tool. But what I do want to say is that it will be timely. One of the benefits of electronic technologies are the ease and immediacy of transmission. So those people participating in catch share programs should have very timely accounting of their catch. They should have a great sense of where they are and whether they've overshot their quota and may be able to conduct trades before hitting the dock to allow them to land the stuff. So I don't want to tie us into any particular model. But in 3 years, what could we have? I think we should have the NOAA Fisheries Service should have 100% readiness for fishery-dependent collections, and largely electronic. I would hope that by then we will have vendors, outside parties, who are going to work with industry to say, here's the best possible tool for satisfying NOAA's requirements as well as your needs for I don't know, market information, for quota accounting, for anything else that, you know, any communications tools that you want amongst your sector members. You know, let's have some third parties, some technologists come in and develop those things. And on the boats, I think we're going to have a mix of things in 3 years. Ideally, we will migrate to having everybody working in electronic means so that we have this timely and more quality assured data coming in. But we do recognize that some boats aren't going to be equipped for that right away, but we hope that, you know, we'll be able to phase them in over time.
Thank you. Questions? I'm going to go around the table once, and then we're going to move on to Tom Dempsey's report. So starting down on that end with Rick. Yep, Rick or Doug or Dave. We have a question, Rick.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, it seems to me that in some of these fisheries, like the fixed gear sector has proposed to move forward with an EM model. I mean, I would think there are going to be certain fisheries that lend themselves very well to using that for catch validation. But then when you get into some of the other fisheries, like we already discussed, some of the high-volume trawl fisheries, you know, we may or may not have the technology to fully discriminate between and among the different species. So if we're trying to monitor river herring interactions, for example, in a high-volume trawl fishery, I'm not sure that technological capability is there yet. If it's not, then, you know, the strategy may be to use that just to monitor that the fish are actually brought aboard. That then leads to the need for capacity and having a strategy for shoreside or dockside monitoring. And so, you know, it seems like if the agency is going to go down this path, we have to think about all the other sort of corollary capacities that have to be developed, because I'm not sure that they're fully developed either yet. And then, you know, that may become the next crush for resources. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment. Yes, I don't think anyone sees at-sea observers going away from all fisheries and a total replacement of at-sea observers. And, you know, their data collection would remain important in any model. Thank you.
This side, Dave, David.
Yeah, thank you, Dan and John. I appreciate the fact that you're stepping up and showing leadership in cooperation with some other groups and, of course, at least one of the sectors, the fixed gear sector. My question is that as you work and then progress with your fishery-dependent collection modernization initiative, as you put it, will you at the same time be putting in the effort the work on a revision to, maybe a major revision to your SBRM, the Standardized Bycatch Reporting Methodology? It seems to me that the two might go hand in hand, so you'd have to wed the two initiatives. I would hate to think that you would make great progress on the first initiative that you described, and the SBRM would be sort of unchanging. Is there going to be this dual effort on with that initiative and the SBRM modifications?
Thank you. I think that's a good question. There will be a need for regulatory and FMP amendments to accommodate different types of collections. And the changes in the data collections could come with different levels of confidence that may inform how SBRM is implemented. And so that's something that we will be working closely with the Science Center on. We want to make sure that we, as we move forward into new collections, that we're not introducing any new sources of error, and that if we can relieve certain fisheries or certain components of the fishery from some level of monitoring, that could be managed. I believe that would require some kind of conforming amendment to the FMPs, though.
So what you're saying then is that the Northeast Fisheries Science Center is totally on board with this initiative.
The Science Center is totally on board with the modernization initiative, yes.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dan. Help me try to understand this a little bit better. Is this a system that you're going to put together that's going to integrate all of the technologies that we're using now, or is this something entirely new that you're thinking of?
Thank you. That's the perfect question in that what we've come at you up to this point with is a form or a tool. Say, here, fill out this form, or your dealer has to submit, electronic reporting in this way. And as we're conceiving of this modernization, we're going to change the idea to requirements. And I could see requirements in the future being a data stream that includes certain data that are going to satisfy all of your reporting requirements. And we hope to have interested vendors who will develop tools to deliver those data. So all the information that goes into a VTR and an electronic dealer report, let's assume that that's going to be part of the requirements. So rather than having a form, there may be a tool that is simply a card that you are as it gets entered into a computer, you take it from the boat and then swipe it at the dealer. You've got total integration of that data. There's full connection of where, and you can follow the fate of the fish. So we're not going, at this point, we're certainly not going to lock anyone into a new technology and a new box on the bridge of the boat. Rather, we want to look at a requirements basis for moving forward so those technologists can step in. Now, the art of this will be mapping from our current systems, and both internally and amongst what industry is using, to what is next. And accommodating that transition is going to be something that we'll have to do in constant communication with the councils and with the industry to ensure that the cost of the transition can be borne appropriately, and that they're not exorbitant. So I think the answer is somewhere in between. We're not going to try to mend what you currently have necessarily. If we go through this analysis of our requirements and we determine that those tools are fully satisfactory, then maybe we don't have that much work to do. But I think what we're going to find is that to meet the qualities of data that people want, which is timely, fully integrated, and correct, that we are going to have to go through the development of some new tools, and we hope to attract some outside developers to help us with that. Thank you.
Vincent?
Thank you for that explanation. And I would just offer a little insight on this. You have some good things in place right now, and I wouldn't try to recreate the wheel, but I would make it as user-friendly as possible and internet-based with through uploads versus stuff through VMS. Because in my experience, it's been very difficult to send reports through the VMS, but to be able to just upload it to the website has been very helpful. Thank you.
Mike.
Yeah, my overall comment is I applaud the effort, and I think it's going in the right direction, and it's, a timetable of 2017 may or may not be the right number, but it's a number that it helps in terms of really moving the ball along. So I think that's great. I would comment that while, there's a good reason for regional councils and regional offices and regional science centers, because every region is different, there are some things that are pretty much national and international, and those tend to be technologies. And it has struck me in the discussion about the development of electronic monitoring how many small projects of a similar nature go on around the country and around the world rather than big integrated projects to really make for breakthroughs. So, that's not totally within your control, but as you're talking to Sam and Richard and others, being realistic about where the breakthroughs might come from by pooling resources and investing in technologies at the national level, I think, is strategically something that needs to be considered very carefully. Other comment I'd make is that the issue of electronic monitoring is potentially tied in terms of its role to the issue of full retention. It was mentioned here. It is a worldwide issue. The common fisheries policy of Europe has just been reformed, and probably one of the most significant issues in it is the movement towards full retention. I don't have any particular view on that, but I think as we go down this road, there ought to again be some leadership and evaluation of the pluses and minuses, the places, the areas where it would work and wouldn't work, and so on, because it will be a major stage setter for the requirements of electronic monitoring. And it would be good to actually have a very careful evaluation.
Dan?
Just to respond, there is a great benefit in having this as a national initiative, and we have George LaPointe here in our backyard as sort of the point man in coordinating this, so we're hearing about what's going on in other regions. I think our conversation in the Northeast is a little bit ahead of the other regions in developing any kind of requirements package rather than a tool focus, which I think others may be pursuing. But we will certainly keep our eyes open to the broader usages and these pilot studies and all this. And one thing I did want to note is we're working on our draft electronic technologies implementation plan. I do hope to have something that I could share with the council by, I'd say, mid to late July. I realize you're not having a meeting until September, late September, and so my hope would be to work with the chair and Tom to see if we could have some agenda time at that point, at that next meeting, to get your feedback on the draft implementation plan. Thank you.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can't tell you how pleased I am by hearing all of this. This is exactly where we need to go. One of the problems that I've that's bothered me from the time I've been on the council now 8 years is the slowness with which we get data and the inaccuracy of some of the data that we get. And it bothers me because I can go to my bank and they're processing millions of transactions in a short period of time, and by the time I get home, everything I've done is on my account online. So that, having said that, I agree with what Vincent said completely. I think it should definitely be internet-based. I'm not sure exactly what the significance of the 517 is, but if that's what you need, I'm in favor of it. One question I have is there's been a number of questions from the audience about the application of this in enforcement. To me, that's a no-brainer. It's no different than having a cop on the beat protecting private property or cameras on the turnpike. Every time you use the turnpike, they take a picture of your vehicle. So I don't have a problem with that. And pirate fishing, as we found out yesterday, hurts everybody. I know it's hurt me when I was back tuna fishing. I know that. So I'm completely in favor of that, and I just wanted to know if I haven't heard you people actually say it. Is enforcement, using this sort of technology for enforcement, a goal or an implied goal or a partial goal of this initiative?
By this technology, I think you're talking about EM narrowly rather than the kind of the broader initiative. I might ask Melissa to address that.
Yeah, so I think, for the groundfish example, for the proposal we're working on with the fixed gear sector, we have specific objectives that the council laid out in the groundfish plan that we're going to be following in the design of that proposal. However, we have, in order to make sure the management measures do what the council intended them to do, we use all the data collections available to us in order to enforce those regulations. That's part of what they're there for. And so, conceivably, EM will be used to, enforce the protocols that were developed for its use and to, enforce those regulations and make sure that the proposal that we've put together and worked so hard on is performing as we designed. And so, yeah, in that respect, it would.
Coming around the corner, Laura, Mary Beth.
Hi,
Hi, Dan. Thank you for your presentation. Certainly to be applauded, as Dr. Sesselman said, the move towards modernization. My question is regarding how you evaluate costs in terms of where do you set the bar in terms of what might be too expensive for a vessel? What kind of metrics do you use? Because it does concern me a little bit that we do have, unlike other parts of the country, we do, well, some other parts of the country, but unlike, say, the West Coast, we're not big factory trawlers that can absorb big costs. We have a variety of different size vessels. And then also sometimes when we are working with organizations that are very deeply pocketed, there tends to be a glossing over of what the cost may actually mean to the boat, to the vessels of different sizes. And so I'm just curious what kind of metrics you use to say what is too expensive and how that plays into your plan.
Okay. Thank you. For EM, so for cameras on boats, our interest is in doing the analysis and determining the cost. And it's at that point that we would present that information to council and to the industry to really make the judgment about whether those costs are affordable and smart for industry before we really proceed forward with a with implementing EM. On the broader initiative, you're right. We don't have the model yet, so we don't know what the cost we're looking at for the the broader electronic technologies modernization. And so again, we know that there are a lot of small boats, there are a lot of different configurations, and the costs are going to vary kind of locally. And so we're going to continue to talk to you about that and try to find solutions for our modernization that are accessible. I think Vince talked about the internet and the power of his smartphone. It's a lot smarter than that VMS unit that's on your boat right now, and a lot more accessible. So if we can find tools that are drawing upon those kind of very accessible technologies, I think we'll go a long way towards addressing affordability. But we're only going to do that in full and open conversation with industry, through the council. We're not going to just embark upon something ignorant of that important component. Thank you.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Apologize for being somewhat late this morning, but I had a short conflict, and the one thing was that I was able to electronically monitor the meeting from my room. So I think that's an awesome technology, and the council's successful at implementing that, so we should be thankful for that. It worked very well, the go-to meeting technology. So, but then I heard my name, and I figured I better get in gear and show up. I was able to attend both the national workshop and the regional workshop, and I think this is a really good discussion. And I appreciated the comments by Jeff Kalin and Rick Robbins relative to the herring fishery, and certainly agreed with those ideas. And I recently met with both Bill Karp and Russ Brown to talk about herring and the possibilities of doing something, fairly quickly in the herring fishery. Let's try to look at answering one simple question. Can cameras answer the question of does slippage occur or not occur? And I got a very positive response from the Science Center. They really are willing to work with the industry. They had, just before I showed up, had a conversation about the same thing with the regional office, which is the lead on this. And so I do expect that, it's my hope that we actually might have cameras on board for a pilot program before the end of the summer. So we are moving forward. It was a recommendation from the regional workshop that herring looked like it was something that we could do. I don't even know that we need an EFP to get a program going. So we are moving forward, and I just wanted to thank Dan and the regional office and everyone who's been working on these efforts, and hopefully we'll be reporting back to the council soon.
Any final comments for Dan? Well, thank you for a lot of work, Dan. Appreciate you briefing the council, and we're looking forward to your next update.
Okay. It's my pleasure, and I hope to see you in September. Thank you.
Well, I suspect we will. Tom, you're up.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jamie's making her way up here. As almost everybody will remember, 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 almost everybody.